off the reading is Jessie Nissom. She is here from New York City tonight. She is the author of the chapbooks Nesting Instinct, Date Cracks Between the Bones of the Foot, Self-Named Body, and Alphabet for M. Her poems and reviews have appeared in 26, Barrow Street, Court Green, Eco-Poetics, 14 Hills, Hangman, HTML, Giant, New American Writing, Requited, Rhino, Le Petite Zine, Women's Studies Quarterly, Shampoo Poetry, and SRPR, among others. Date Cracks Between the Bones of the Foot, a full-length collection and a finalist for the National Poetry Series, will be published by Furniture Press Books in 2015. Congratulations. A recipient of grants from the Ragdale Foundation and the Constance Saltonstall Foundation, Jessie is currently a faculty fellow in the humanities at Syracuse University in New York. Welcome, Jessie. Please make sure your phones are turned off. Sorry.
That's okay. Thank you, Kirsten. Thank you, Emily. Thank you, everybody, for coming. Everybody who works on the magazine, everybody who reads it, everybody who reads poetry. I am going to start with fire. And when I write poems, I always start with reading. So this one starts with a quote from Michael Palmer. And you can read more about that in Juliana Spahr's generous introduction to the poem. But fire. Darker than snow on paving stones. The poem was called I Forgot. There is no relation. And that's Michael Palmer. The poem was called Snow. It was a poem about seasons and climate change. The poem was called There Is No Relation. The poem wasn't called, and it wasn't calling. She hadn't written it yet. The poem was called Dry Leaves Fall From Overhead, or How to Grip Your Keys Correctly. And later, it was called Tendinitis, then Cookies and Cravings, and finally Recycling Bin. The poem was about dry tree cuttings. The poem was called Fire, about a man jailed for inadvertently starting a fire while mowing his lawn. The poem had numbness at its center and tingling into its extremities. The poem had poor circulation, or it was waiting by the library circulation desk to be read. Or the poem took its form from the concept of the card catalog. The poem contained a strong argument against technology. Its images depicted a beautiful woman or man carefully tending to a file cabinet. The beautiful person's care toward the cards and the file drawer's metal handles and the small type of the text on the cards could be understood as love. The poem was retitled Love or Library Love. The poem began to be about why humans need neutral spaces like libraries. The poem was about the poet's need for a neutral space, a place to go when she felt disorganized. Everyone agreed it was a giveaway title, the kind that ruins the piece by saving nothing for the terse internal lines. It was this new thing in poetry they called a title takeover. It supposedly stopped you from thinking freely about anything. It stopped the poem's power and could become dangerous to humans as well. The poem was called The End of Poetry, or The End of Poetry About Poetry. And then everyone had to choose a place to stand. Everybody had to choose whether to stand on the one side or on the other side of this red line drawn between the title and the poem. It wasn't clear who put the line there or how they got it to stick, but someone shouted out rudely, "Has this become a Beckett play? Because if so, I'm leaving." And there was laughter, or a whole wave of laughter, because although it was once cool to be into Beckett, it was not avant-garde enough anymore. All the people standing on the title side of the red line seemed to be laughing, and the people who stood on the poem side cried, "Beckett, Beckett," and stomped their boots. It was getting hostile, the air changed pitch, and someone, we're not sure which side they were standing on, threw a hard object at the overhead light, breaking the bolt casing and sending a spark across the ceiling. The poem was about mayhem. It was about how lack of language leads to war. So I'm going to read a few poems from my chapbook, Day Cracks Between the Bones of the Foot. And This collection comes partly from my experience as a dancer, training as a dancer for a number of years, and then being injured, and spending so much time working on the body and performing and thinking about audience. I wanted to get inside of the body and kind of look at the world from in there in these poems. Diagram her dream of flight. Space pulls like a vacuum. The teacher has put the mouth of the hose to your quadriceps, turned on the sucking sound. It vibrates through skin and marrow and reorders your cellular structure. This is how a bridge moves, across by touch. In the high ropes, smart your fingertips. Still the body keeps its head on, one whole costume sewn, one cape made of light. And then the title poem from that book, Day Cracks Between the Bones of the Foot. And this came from somebody reading the manuscript, sharing the work with another poet, and he said, you know, you're writing about this limitation in the body, this injury, you know, try to articulate what you can't articulate about that, you know, that breaking point. I will not write about the body or in the body or in fear of those remote shadows that move. I won't make my body into the lost sea. If the spine or her leotard appears beside a vine of fruits, if the beside turns into about dance, about fear, organs just having been brutally modified, I will not write body in the door. I will not be so many fruits across the empty, be my body. Shadows spiral across doorways. Valley the tendons, pile them up to metaphor a lost sea. Not Achilles or Odysseus, totally mortal tendons, meteoric, not prophesied paths. I won't make the body cruciate in the door. I'm not of or about turnings. I'm not crossed according to or into or out. I'm not the body of fruits across the reddishness, a mere diagram of appearance. I won't cut the spine. I won't about. I won't rotate in the spine of the door. Those rings of muscle strain will not my body make. And then one more from that group, finale. The startling pressure falling makes. She defines for herself what this means, whether or not she has breathing. She will not revisit the helium year, rising, then failing like wet knots of hair. And more recently, I've been working a lot with found text and with erasure and collage. So this next group of poems is inspired by the economic crisis, foreclosures, evictions, also ideas of house and shelter. And it's all found language that's been erased and then reformed, thrown back together. These don't have titles, so they come from a collection called Nesting Instinct. So I'll just read them, I'll kind of move through. Backed by yard and acreage, the gate worries its latch like a risk. What's worse, the threat of drainage or saturation? To the sky, the field promises its mirror, which seems less than a spoonful. The face of scarcity at the fence never ceases to stun, looking in. American implies house and person, middle-class grandparents crowding over empty fruit, the ambulant corporatizing, the quest for security, built of wood, not of stone. Years boxed for reassembly, to no covetous lineage, brick by brick, and the gilded furniture, vast near the coast of cavernous spaces. Sometimes there is a tapestry doorway covering God's money. A factory sheds people. Imagine a scene deflating in a former grist mill, 37 bathrooms. When all else fails, release down the middle, hotly seating charged walls. The emblem of a protector re-enters the family home, home shifting. No matter the star quality, no matter the object cluster, no matter the authenticity, no matter the cult of the familiar, no matter the perception of value, no matter the work history, universities absorb cities as the inverse of a thought transmittable from its range, as when a testimony jeopardizes the authority of the teller. And one more from this group. An insubstantial being, cracked vessel still dwelling in the thwack that cleft it. A house refigures its distance to vacancy. The impaired whispers of grass below mailbox. Living, having, breathing, a vague negotiation. Step back from the block, light-footed porch guests. Overture the glass. And I'll read one more poem that's newer. By the time I arrived, I was a bird. It's not that I was without worries exactly, but whatever I needed to worry about was up there, higher than I had the means to picture. And when I reached out into space, it wasn't from loneliness. I concentrated with all my energy. I stretched the seam where air touched me. That's how I arrived. Please don't ask what kind of bird or what color is your breast. I have a finely tuned center of gravity. I cultivate my own colors. Some texture is grass, and others are clouds at a distance. Some things are flat. There is light, and then there is light. Green is the main thing that makes a frantic heart light itself. You could call me a feather or a needle. You might say, where is its mate? This is how you arrive from an incomplete direction, backdropped by a draft of feet, a deep shadow of ground. I select small findings carefully. My mate is the slate roof's secret. Nothing you could sense from where your flat-edged version of wind sings at the sides of buildings. Would you like to consider what a dandelion is to me, or the real way that large rock looks? My answers are tucked under my wing pits. My rule is to keep moving. I am not ticklish. I do not read or write. I say whatever the world reveals to me. Light, light, light. My face is bathed in light. I have only been a bird this long since I left. Thank you.
See Monica back there? Yeah, yeah. Shaylin, she should be coming in. Is